Hey, welcome everyone to National School Choice Week presented by See Homeschoolers. Today we're going to be having a conversation with one of the homeschoolers that I most admire and look to for insight and inspiration and even answers. She is a science curriculum writer and the founder of SEA, Secular Eclectic Academic Homeschoolers. And our topic today is Secular Eclectic Academics. So everyone, please help me welcome Blair Lee. Good morning, Blair.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be talking with you about our, or at least one of our favorite topics, which of course is Secular Eclectic Academics. And thanks for joining me.
Thanks. You know, it's funny that, it's funny that we're talking about this today because just about 3 days ago in our group, people were talking about what the methodology they use of homeschooling. And Christina Keller, one of the main group admin, put in a PM to all the other admins. She said, I don't know why we always do this where we go back and forth about methodology that we use in homeschooling. You know what I am? I'm a secular eclectic academic homeschooler. That's my methodology. And I thought it was really funny because it's basically a grab bag of all of the methodology.
What I find so interesting about the evolution, I guess, of secular eclectic academic homeschooling is that when I started homeschooling, which, of course, today is about, you know, you, but it's just how it's relevant to me as a homeschooler. When I started homeschooling back in 2009, I was completely unaware of this two-camped homeschooling between, you know, religious homeschoolers and secular homeschoolers. And I had no idea about methodologies. And I needed to give a name to our school for when we filed with the state. And I didn't know what to name our school, so I just called it the Eclectic Homeschool Academy because at the time, I guess, it was more I didn't know what I was doing.
Trailblazing, baby. That's what you were doing. You know, you're a trailblazer once again.
Yeah, I thought, well, eclectic sort of works because it leaves the avenues open to any, you know, destination. It's just going to be about the journey.
We call our school a handcrafted education. I've always called it that. Kids in California, you need to choose a name using the way I homeschool because I use them. I won't go into the vagaries of California homeschooling, but anybody can email me and ask me. We're in the group, but
yes,
basically in California, I use a private school affidavit, which means I get to do whatever I want, basically.
And we have the same luxury here in Georgia without having to actually file as private schools. So that's great, too. I mean, I think it's kind of like, you know, different directions to the same destination kind of a thing. But it's interesting, though, to me that you brought up, you know, that you refer to your school as, you know, handcrafted education, because that's sort of where I want to start with you this morning, is with the first thing that you talk about when you talk about handcrafting an education. And I've read your blog, and I've had the privilege of hearing you speak at conferences and such, and you use the word innovative, that people, homeschoolers, should make the education that they're crafting for their child innovative. And I love the word, absolutely love the word innovative. I'm a word lover as it is. But it's become a bit of a buzzword. And sometimes I think maybe it would help, especially new homeschoolers or those thinking about homeschooling, to get a little more substance given to them behind the buzzword. So can we start talking about what that really means, innovative homeschooling?
I actually think that's the most important thing to, you know, it's interesting because when we're, some of the most creative people, people naturally are pretty creative. And one of the areas I see people afraid to be innovative and creative with, and now I'm equating these two, innovative and creative, they are afraid to do that with their children. Because what if we fail? We most homeschoolers, I hate to say it, we have a few, even those of us who aren't prone to fear of failure, we get nervous when it comes to our children's education. I've met a few homeschoolers that didn't do it, but they're in the minority. The rest of us get worried and we get nervous, and it's because the responsibility of our children's learning we've put on ourselves. And obviously we take it seriously, or we wouldn't be doing it, because homeschooling is a lot of work, but all worth it if you love it. Most days
absolutely.
It's all worth it. Some days it's not, because you and I both have teenagers. Oh, it's worth it every day.
But I think that's a different conversation, though. So.
Right. And innovative. So the innovative, if you come up with an idea, go for it. Do not be afraid. Do not think, is this a grade level? Is this something that the school is going to recognize? Maybe, and maybe not. I think the most important step to being innovative really starts with a paradigm shift from how something is best taught to how it is best learned. And so when you're in school, I was a college professor, and even took a while before I really focused on, took a couple of semesters of teaching. Actually, probably three, because I was about a year and a half into it, and I was looking out into the audience, and I had these nurses, and I realized when you teach chemistry at community college, you get a lot of nurses in your audience. People who want to be nurses, because it's A, the hardest class for most nurses to get their nursing degree. A lot of these gals they have their kids and they want a better job, so they want to become a nurse, which is a great profession. And so I realized that I had it that these most of the gals in the most of the nurses, because they were coming to my office hours, or the people who wanted to be nurses, and a lot of the other students, they did not know the math needed for chemistry. So I started focusing on. I rewrote my entire semester's worth of curriculum so that I started with math, so that when I started to talk about the math within the chemistry concepts, everybody didn't glaze over and start to fall asleep. So it was a matter of how people were learning this, because I had to then condense all the chemistry I wanted to teach into a briefer period of time. And so somehow, as I began homeschooling Sean, I began to realize that most materials and most of the way that people think about teaching is from the perspective of how it is taught, not how people learn it. And so that is really one of the most important things you can do, is to focus on how your child or your children are best learning it, the materials. And it sounds really simple, but it's actually really quite profound. The academic benefits when there's a focus on how a subject is best learned are really impressive. They're possibly even more important than the academics, though, because basically they're going to get the same academics, are the benefits to a learner's sense of self, right? Because when you work on from the perspective of how someone best learns, you're showing that you value their unique intellect and how that unique intellect accesses knowledge. And so, I mean, it's really easy to see how that's going to affect an individual's relationship with learning.
So oh, I completely agree. Completely. And
yeah.
I actually have a very recent story that I could share if it would be of any help to anyone regarding my own daughter as to exactly what you just said. It's just a perfect example. History has always been a snooze fest for her. And I've never found – I've tried and tried and tried, and I failed miserably at finding a way to get her excited about history. I love history. Now, she would love it if we would go on field trips and see, like, we went to the original governor's mansion here in Georgia, and there was a docent, and he was wonderful, and it was fascinating, and she and I both loved it. And I kept trying to figure out, how do I get that to transfer over into other ways of studying history, because we can't field trip absolutely everything. And We watched the Georgia, the PBS Hamilton special behind the scenes. We happened to watch that a few nights ago or several nights ago. And, of course, my daughter is into theater, Broadway, theater, movies, television, all that sort of thing. And we fell in love with that show and the little snippets of music that we were able to hear from that. I mean, Hamilton to us is probably one of the most brilliant Broadway shows ever conceived.
When he says, "I'm not going to waste my shot," isn't that the line? Or what is
that? Yes.
I had to explain it to Sean. I said, as I was listening to it, I said, "That's such a profound line." And Sean said, my 17-year-old, "Why?" And I said, "Because he dies because he wastes his shot." Sean said, "Oh." I said, "He never wastes his shot when it came to furthering his own work through life."
I get goosebumps. I get goosebumps just talking about it. It's brilliant. And so after we watched that, my daughter's interest in that, in the real history that was a part of the Broadway show, again, brilliantly done, she downloaded the soundtrack.
Well, you know, I'm still working on her to sing something from Hamilton at our conference.
From Hamilton at the C conference, I know. But she downloaded that soundtrack, and she made it a goal. And if my mindset were different, I would have perhaps kind of poo-pooed this. You know, she made it a goal to memorize every song from the Hamilton soundtrack. And it's been 4 or 5 days, and she's just about done. She's got them memorized. And on her own, she went into Amazon, and she ordered not only the book, the Hamilton book that you can buy that talks about all the behind-the-scenes stuff and gives snippets, but she went and ordered the book that inspired Lin-Manuel Miranda to write Hamilton, an 800-page on Hamilton, the story of Hamilton. And she's so excited, and I'm like, "You know it's 800 pages, right?" She's like, "Yeah, but will you read it with me?" And so right there, I think, is just a prime example of how innovation, and this is not the way they learn American history in public school, that's for sure. And some people would say that it's, quote unquote, not the right way. But actually, it's completely the right way for her. Because
Right. It's all about how that person, because if you focus on how an individual best learns, it leads to a person who loves learning and who understands, and probably the most important thing, they grow up understanding how they, as an individual, learn. So in addition to her learning all of this particular history, she now has a better understanding of what it takes for her to, for her brain to turn on when it comes to certain academic topics. And it's interesting that you talk about the music because, you know, one of the things when Sean was growing up, there were a lot of people talking about rap songs, about math rap songs. And I found that Sean learned much better when we used math raps. And those are actually fairly common. And now we've got history rap through Lynn, I mean, I actually think he's started a new genre. Sean loves rap, and he likes rap from rappers who are politically aware. So they're really political raps, not Hamilton. And I can't even think of the names of any of the people. He's always saying, "Mom, you got to listen to this. Listen to what this person is talking about." And actually, Sean really is more aware of some of the social issues through the raps he listens to. It's different.
Well,
but and these people who are they're teaching us. They're doing this to teach. I mean, it's all really interesting. The way your brain works and fires is just super interesting and innovative. Focus makes a big difference.
And I think that's what, to me, that's the substance behind the word innovative, what makes it innovative. Well, you know, while we were watching the PBS special behind the scenes of the Broadway show, I believe it was Christopher Jackson, who played George Washington in the original cast on Broadway, who made a comment that my daughter actually went, oh, after he said it. And I thought, oh, that's a key moment for her. He said that he was talking about researching George Washington. Of course, Christopher Jackson is an African-American male, and he was talking about playing George Washington and the dichotomy of George Washington for all he did and still being a slave owner. And he started talking about how history is just dramas that haven't been told yet. And it was, I wish I could actually just quote him, because it was a beautiful thing he said. And my theater-loving, actress-wannabe daughter went, oh. And I literally felt like I watched the light bulb go on in her head about history.
So one of the things, like with innovative that I think is sort of, we should, when we talk about innovative and I talk about daring to be innovative, one of the things with that is you need to recognize as you're working with your child in homeschooling that and both Mary and I have been homeschooling a long time, and this is much harder to do at the beginning. It's okay if it doesn't look like what you studied in school. It's okay if it doesn't look like what your next door neighbor or your sister's kids who are going to traditional school, what their learning looks like. There's the with innovative, the focus should be on the how much the person is accessing what they're learning. So, for example, if what your daughter this year, what she learns is that history can be big and powerful and meaningful, and she focuses on the founding fathers or even one founding father as a following through history, there's really a lot that can be learned through that. And although it's special, you know, like more specialized, that's okay. That's okay. It can look that different.
Exactly. I think
this shift leads to, like, I call it a handcrafted education. A lot of people call it eclectic. And it is, but, you know, we've talked about it a lot about the learner, but it takes a parent like you who is really excited about, who is really focusing on, who likes the arts. Obviously, you have to like the arts or she wouldn't have been exposed to them. And so a part of a handcrafted education is one that focuses on the passion, strengths, and weaknesses of the student and also the entire family. Meg Groom said something in her interview that really resonated with me, and it was that when parents choose curricular materials or programs, if they are going to teach them to their children, the learning approach has to fit with the parent to a certain extent, or the parent can't teach from them. And so I think with homeschooling to really work, with innovativeness to really work, a parent has to get it, or they might miss it. And so in a way, it's really holistic. I think of it as really holistic. In fact, I jokingly, because, you know, I'm a scientist, I call it the Gaia approach to homeschooling. Like, we embrace the whole.
You know, I agree, because I've learned several things in the last 7, 8 years, however long it's been now that I've been homeschooling. But one of the things that I have learned that I don't see a lot of talk about is it has to work for you as well, at least for me. It had to work for me as well as for Punky, because it was more about her than it was about me. But if it didn't excite me, or if it didn't, it was too complicated for me, or whatever negative challenge I couldn't overcome as the one who was trying to teach that way, whatever that is, then it didn't work. It really is a holistic approach, and it's the entire family. And to me, that's what eclectic means almost for us as being eclectic homeschoolers, is it's almost about cultural immersion into our culture, our family. I'm not speaking of culture as in, you know, my husband's Asian and I'm, you know, Native French, whatever. I mean just our family culture. What resonates with us, what's important to us, and what shoots out of that then. That's our eclecticness. Yeah, we try to hit the high points, you know, of education. Obviously, there are things that need to be learned. But that's what the eclectic is for us. And I think that's exactly in keeping with what my understanding of what you're saying is.
Yeah, it has to be a fit for the whole family. So, you know, another thing that I like to talk about in addition to innovative is that what was really profound for us was to treat our children's education as a journey through learning and not a ticket to a destination. And it was really interesting to me when I realized that we treat education as a ticket. The passing first, learning to read is the ticket out of kindergarten, for example, which I'm not sure if it is because I've been out of the system so long. But, you know, you've got these little things that are tickets to the next level, and how, you know, high school is the ticket to college, and college is the ticket to, and college is the area when kids, when the brain, the high school and college, where the brain is at a stage where they, that it opens up and where people could really access learning and come to an understanding of how the world and politics and government and finance and art and everything works the most profoundly is when we focus most on the ticket. And that is a shame. But I see homeschoolers do it too. We care enough to educate about our children. We're worried about it. What if we don't get it right? What if a freshman year of high school studying Hamilton means that, you know, she can't get into the college she wants? You know, it's sort of the ephemeral it, right? You know, the ticket. What is what's the ticket?
It appears to be a very linear journey, too. The ticket journey.
Yeah,
it's very linear.
And that's the problem, because your brain, especially one like mine, which can be a problem if I get off track in this talk. I'm sorry, everybody. My brain is like, it's not linear at all, and I had to train it. My son wasn't as open to having his linear, to having his brain, I'm going to make up a word here, linearized. And it's interesting because creativity and art, I'm going to go out on a limb, and if anybody disagrees with me, feel free to. This is just my opinion, the world according to Blair. Creativity is not linear at all. That is something that I do not view as linear, and that's because of how my creative muse works. But so if creativity isn't linear and education focuses on this linear path to a ticket, it's disempowering, I think, for a lot of people. And I think it's why a lot of people get turned off by learning. They're really turned off by how our education system works, but they really think of it as a turned off by learning. And so many homeschoolers worry. I used to say it's because they're not experienced educators, but I think as an experienced educator, we're the most likely to fall into the trap of thinking of learning as linear because we came from that.
It was the only academic world I knew.
Yeah, it's scary.
That's how I learned. I learned all the way through, you know, the high school. I mean, all the way through, you know, my 12 years in public school and private school, and then 4 years of college, 2 years of a master's degree, and that's the way it was. So it was deeply ingrained in me, and I knew that it was deeply ingrained in me, yet I also knew that my most creative moments or my most profound insights into understanding something did not come linearly, and I'm making up words too, and it didn't look anything like what went on in the classroom every day in that system.
So you're
constantly fighting against it as a homeschooling parent. I always say that people talk about de-schooling a lot, their children. You know, you pull them out of public school and you should de-school them, give them time off. I think parents, especially those who have not been involved in any form of different education other than the one that's presented to us traditionally, publicly in the United States especially, they need to de-school themselves. They need to get to a place where they're comfortable with the learning looking different.
Yeah, so this is what I want to tell parents as in to our homeschooling. As an experienced educator, some of the best teaching that I have ever seen is being done in the homeschool community. I know that you hear people outside of the homeschooling community saying differently. The biggest detractors of homeschooling are people who have not done it, really, honestly, for the most part. As an experienced educator, when I say the best, some of the best teaching is done in the homeschooling community, I've come to believe that it's because there is a focus on the joy of learning, making learning a journey and an adventure, and raising an individual who values learning and knowledge and who understands how they, their own unique intellect. And that is huge because you are raising somebody who has the skills to be a lifelong learner, who recognizes that information is always coming in, and they understand how they can access that information. And I think that is, there's no way when you've got 30 children or even 20 children that you're teaching all at the same time that you can focus on each individual. You just can't.
Of course.
And so we are gifting our children with something quite special.
I agree. And I, by the way, just as a little side note, I never had as much respect. I've always had respect, but I never had as much respect for public school teachers since I've become a homeschooler. Because I know they care about their students. They want to give their students what we want to give our students. But the system itself has just got them trapped, and it's what a struggle to try to do that for 30 students in a classroom. I have the utmost respect for public school and private school teachers who are trying to spark a love of learning and put them on that journey.
It's not a job you go into for the money. It's a job you go into because you want to make a difference in kids' lives. And,
exactly.
I totally respect.
But I think this brings us to the next interesting point, though, Blair, which a lot of what we've said with the innovation and the individualizing of education with our kids and everything, it sounds very, or it can at least sound sort of very, trying to think of an appropriate word, like there's not a focus, or it's kind of all over the place, it's all over the map. But really, I know you and I, we do focus on academics. So let's talk a little bit about that, about how we, and especially you, have this handcrafted education that's individualized, and it's about the love of learning, but yet it's still very academic. Let's talk about why that is, why that's important, and how you do that.
Well, I believe that there should be a broad liberal arts So you might be wondering, right, where all the academics fit in. So when I talk about eclectic and innovative, I'm talking about an academically rich journey through learning. Part of that is just because I feel if I'm going to take over my child's education, I have a responsibility, my child's journey through learning. I have a responsibility that he learn core subjects. I don't know where he's going to choose to go in his life. But part of it, you know, I come from science, and right now in our country, the level of dismissal of science facts as possibly not true. And we're talking about things that are absolutely verifiable, real, and the science isn't difficult. And people are dismissing them as possible opinion type things. No, I don't believe in that. Well, they think that it's not a believe or not, right? It's like saying, I don't believe that during the daytime when the sky is clear, the sky is blue. So it's just not a, you know, it's not, you know, whether evolution happens, it just does. look at dogs. You don't have to look too far. There is an increased rate of climate change. So these are things that, and so when I think about dismissing key parts of knowledge, you know, or core subjects, I recognize that, hey, you know what, if you're going to vote for individuals, for example,
who take a stand one way or another on science, you should know enough science to be able to understand who's telling you the truth about where the science is. Who knows more about the science or, you know, history? What does it really say about key events and how they transpired and how specific groups of people were really treated? What does it, you know, and I'm just pulling those two, but any of the subjects. So I think that it's really important that there is some focus on broad liberal arts education, even in a homeschooling and even in something that's very eclectic. So the question then is, how do you do it? How do you go about creating an education that you want to gift your child with? And I do think of homeschoolers as gifting their children with something special. And so I think that the easiest way to do it and the most effective is to start with a basic framework so that even for a focus, for an education where the focus is on the journey, it's important that you also start from this core academic background. And sometimes people think that means that I'm not a fan of unschooling, and that's not true. I'm a fan of every methodology, and I think every single methodology has its strengths and weaknesses depending on the child and the subject and how they access the subject. So, for example, I like to be very big and innovative. But if my child really struggles in a subject, I go back to the basics of how people say it's best taught for kids who struggle with information. And actually, I found that to be math, for example. We're pretty traditional with how he learns math, and it's simply because that's what I found to work best for him in this subject that he doesn't love. So for us, the core liberal arts looks like language, arts, math, science, foreign language, and computer science and history. What does it look like for you? Does it look the same for you, Mary?
Similar and different, which I think is probably the answer that most eclectic homeschoolers would give you. There's similarities and then there's differences. My daughter is not strongly mathematical or science-minded. She enjoys the concepts of science, but is not science-driven. That's not where she first goes to in her mind. Everything for her, or most everything for her, is definitely more into the art side of things, the creative arts. And I think this kind of comes back to sort of our family culture. In our house, certain things are important, and they're important to us. It doesn't mean they have to necessarily be important to anyone else. But language is an important thing for me, language arts. Being able to speak well, being able to write well, being able to communicate well. So some of it, I think, is just the tone is set that way. My daughter is fairly well-spoken and has always been, for the most part, fairly well-spoken. She was 3 when someone, I can't remember exactly the circumstance, someone asked her something, and her answer was, no, that wouldn't be appropriate. And the adult looked at me and said, how old is she? And I said, 3. And they're like, okay, wow. And it took me a minute to understand, you know, what they were trying to convey to me. But we had always spoken to her as if she were just a person, a human being. And we didn't change our language for her, and I certainly didn't change my language for her. So she grew up in a fairly grammatically correct, well-spoken, well-written household. And in that sense, that became a core academic, because it reflected us, my husband and I. My husband is a lover of all things history and science. If he has the television on and it's not some form of news broadcast, chances are it's some form of documentary or the History Channel or the Discovery Channel or those sort of things. And so she's grown up sitting with him watching those things. So in that sense, many ways, that's how some of the core academics come out for us.
I've never been the type to sit
and do specific, like, okay, now we're going to sit and do science. That's never how we've operated. But we have other ways that the science and the history and the language arts, and then of course for her, theater. Theater is her, you know, you said computer science. She has absolutely no interest really in computer science, but she has a, you know, enormous interest in theater, and she's been in productions, and she was 12 and she got cast as Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird, and then for the next 4 months she ate, slept, and breathed To Kill a Mockingbird and Scout because of being in the show and in rehearsals, but also because we incorporated that then into learning about that, and then that led to learning about civil rights and race relations and all that sort of a thing.
So when we start telling our own personal stories, sometimes it can be hard for people to figure out, okay, that sounds great. Sounds like you've done a great job. How am I going to do that? And so I guess what I would say is the framework actually I think is really important. It can look eclectic, and I encourage homeschoolers to really be familiar with the various methodologies. That way you can there are certain buzzwords like unschooling or classical. And one of the first places to start, if you start talking with somebody who, for example, let's say unschooling, you should find out how they define that. I've met some extremely academic unschoolers, and I've met some radical unschoolers, and I've seen people be successful in all the various, I live in California, we have a lot of unschoolers. I've seen a lot of success with that, and I've seen people who really, they and their kids really struggled with it. They needed more structure. So you have to find out how the various terms are defined. And you don't need to have, you don't need to be a professor of education to understand the various methodologies. But I think you want a framework of what you think are core subjects. And the thing to really, I asked Mary about, I know you well. Mary and I know each other. And so I wanted to hear her version of the core liberal arts education is different than ours, and yours, I hope is going to be different than ours, because that's sort of the point. It's a handcrafted education, but if you have that framework, and that framework is subject to change over the years and grades and your child's interest level and your interest level, and we introduced politics, because when Sean was in.
Yes.
Because I decided in 2014 when young people didn't vote, I said, well, that's not going to happen for Sean. And we had quite a year last year in politics, and Sean choosing a candidate, and we worked for the candidate, and it was a really exciting year for him learning about how politics and American government works. But, you know, so that I didn't plan for that when Sean was 8 years old. I planned that 2 years before the election in 2016. So the framework can change, but if you have the framework, it gives you a place to always go back to. The framework, I think, even if you're not a homeschooler who plans a lot, or even if you really feel like you want to do more of an unschooling path, the framework, you can work very, very loosely from it. You know, it can be, let's use handcrafts as an example. Your framework can be a frame that you are making a needlepoint canvas from that is printed, and all the colors have been picked out for you. And if that works for you and your child, that and you stick that closely to your frame, to the framework, great. But if you're somebody who sees a pattern in a book and you say, I think I can recreate that, and it ends up getting further and further away from the way the pattern in the book looks, well, that's okay too. But it gives you something to keep going back to when you get stuck. And the other thing about a framework, since you sort of pay attention to the core disciplines, is that you it can be used sort of as a diagnostic tool. Because one of the things you're going to want to do if you're eclectic is you're really going to want to document what you're doing. Why I have come to believe that, and I think there's a generation of homeschoolers that my son's a part of that are going to prove me right, and the people following after him even more right, is that as long as you really document what you did. So, for example, what you're doing with Anna this year and what I'm doing with Sean, what I did with Sean last year, if you really document it and you give the reasons and you are able to say this is why this is so profound, I don't think you're going to have problems when, you know, if your kids apply to college with that on their transcript.
I completely agree with everything, obviously, that you just said, even when it looks different for us. But in the course of listening to you go deeper with it, as far as painting the picture more clearly for those who go, well, that sounds great, but I can't figure out how that applies to me, I think our core subjects or our core focus have always been kind of the traditional tongue-in-cheek, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Those were the three things that I felt like if you can read really well, if you can write and communicate and speak well, and, of course, if you can perform at least the basic math that's necessary for everyday life, those are the foundations. And the big ideas in history and in science and in literature were sort of are still sort of the core academics for us.
So I want to open up, though, the subjects that you just said. So for reading, let's say your child has dyslexia or some other reading issue.
My daughter did. My daughter
did. Audiobooks, and as you work on you can be so eclectic with that. You can go, okay, her brain actually can handle more complex information. Let's have her listening to audiobooks while we're working on the specific mechanics, whether it's math or, let's say, writing. I use Dragon because I have some carpal tunnel because of my writing, and it does not like my voice, I'm sorry to say. But there's always a lot of errors when I use it. It's getting better and better as it learns my voice better, but it's taken a couple of years for it to get there. But, it's better than nothing. So you can teach your child, you can go to where their intellect is as you work on some of those. It's just the benefits. Actually, I've come to understand that the benefits of homeschooling for kids who have some sort of learning issue, if the parents are working on that, is really big, really, really big, because you've got a real focus on the specific issues in a way that schools just don't have the money to focus on in a lot of cases.
And I think also my daughter's reading issue had more to do with an actual physical, I don't know if disability is the right word. She had trouble with her convergence. So she would read a word on the page and her eyes would pull in and out of focus. And as she went on a couple more words, it kept doing that. So she was constantly having to go back to try to reread a word, and then she wasn't able to remember what she read. And we got her eye therapy for that, and she's better now, but, I mean, she doesn't have those issues anymore with reading, but because she struggled with those issues when she was first reading, and it took us until she was 10 or 11 before we figured out what was going on and started the therapies, and now she's 15, she still isn't a fast reader or necessarily the strongest reader, and it has nothing to do with her ability, with her intellect or her mental ability to understand things. And so reading to her sometimes or paraphrasing for her, if I read what she's reading, if we're reading the same book at the same time and then we talk about it, that's another way to help them.
You know, it's interesting. You just made me think of something as we're talking about this. And I actually get emails from people all the time. Will I help them put together a year of study? And please don't email me based on this statement. I don't do that. But one of the things about putting together a handcrafted education for somebody is it would actually be really hard for anybody to handcraft an education who didn't know the child and who wasn't really. You can do tests and you can do assessments and you can figure out somebody's learning style. But at the end of the day, and that's why Mary and I keep, every time we give an example, we come back to our own kids. And so it might seem like we're really just talking about our personal journey, homeschooling really ends up being a lot about your personal journey with your one and only child. Or, with that one and only, you might have 10 children, but each child, trust me, it's different how you homeschool that one and only person. And there are going to be similarities. And so that's really, as you know, the See Facebook, the closed group, grows so fast, the admin and I, it's hard to keep up with the influx of people who want to join that group. And I think that's what you need. If you are going to create an eclectic journey through learning for your child, handcraft their education, you need a group you can go to and get live answers from. There's no one person. I can tell you that with my child, and this is all you can do, I did the best I could. I started with the core liberal arts education means you're going to have something to go back to. And then from there, be innovative. Let it be organic. Recognize that time is the money of life, and the time you spend learning, it's not always joyous. I'm going to tell you right now, it's not always joyous, but it wouldn't always be joyous if they went to public school. It doesn't, when you're homeschool, everybody's going crazy, look at the situation. Is it even the academics? And if it is, figure out why. And that is when a group like our group is the closed Facebook group that has, I think we're getting close on 11,000 members. I know we are very close. That's why that sort of group's important, because you can get in there and you can ask real-time questions about issues that are specific. So when you have 11,000 people, somebody's got a child that learns pretty similarly to yours. And I think that's why it grows so much. There's the admin are really active. We try to keep it strictly on academics. We try to be really nice to each other. Because that's sort of my personality. I don't deal that well with dissension. I like everything to be really positive. That's how I am, the sunny side up. But it's about community in there. And it's so rare that I like to say no question goes unanswered. And I think that's just about true. It's a group that really, really is excellent about giving feedback to people. And I think that, and it's interesting to me because in a way that's like a teacher. It's like, okay, this is how I think of the closed group sometimes. I think of it as the teacher's lounge at a big school. It's like, ooh, I don't know how to do this, or I'm struggling with this. I think I'll go to the teacher's lounge and see if any of my fellow teachers have ever dealt with this. And that that's sort of the analogy I sometimes use in my head. And when we formed it, it was what I thought. Now it's a humongous teacher's lounge.
It certainly has grown much. Right. I think that when it comes to, at least for me, this is the understanding that I have now in handcrafting this secular education for my child, this academic education for my child, using the eclectic method, which means whatever works is what we use, whatever methodology in the moment achieves the objectives. I lately come back to that expression, if you don't know what you stand for, then you'll fall for anything. I think I was like that in the beginning of, and by beginning, I mean the first several years of our journey. I didn't know what worked, and I was so afraid to fail that I fell for any new, it was kind of like a diet. You know, you say, you name a diet, not I've tried it and failed at it kind of a thing. You name a way to homeschool, and I probably tried it and didn't do well at it. And I think that's probably the best advice. And correct me or share yours if you disagree, to those just starting out on the homeschooling journey is don't be afraid to fail, because you will. And it's okay, because that's life. But take the time to figure out what you love and what they love and how they love to learn, so that you can keep that passion going, and then follow that. Know what you stand for. Know what your framework is, and that way, the journey might not be quite as bumpy. At least I think if I could go back and
well,
do it all over again.
Well, no, I'm gonna. I don't look at. I worry about whether I'll fail or not sometimes, which is silly. My son really takes issue with it because he thinks it's a reflection on him when I behave as if somehow I'm not doing a good enough job. And that was really interesting. When he became old enough to articulate that statement to me, I really had to reevaluate how hard I was on myself, because he said, if you say that you're not doing a good job in this one area with me, that means I'm actually not doing very well. I'm not performing up to what you think in your head I should be. And so I came to understand that if I was doing my best at the time and he was working his hardest or even working well, I mean, if I was satisfied and he was satisfied, then why would I ever look back and say that we hadn't, why would I undervalue by saying that we were failing? And really in learning, and I think that is one of the most important things with learning, did you learn? You did not fail if you learned. And school, we are really hard on ourselves, but I have three stepsons who are all in their 30s. I've known one since he was 22 months old, one since he was 11, and one since he was 13. Even on schools are a mixed bag as well. I've sat in classrooms where teachers taught truncation instead of rounding because they didn't understand rounding, and called truncation rounding, which if that doesn't mean anything to you and you really care, email me, I'll tell you. But I won't spend a lot of time in a math lesson. And, you know, I've heard teachers misstate science facts, and I've heard teachers say, wow, I'm going to have to remember that because that was a really profound way to teach it. And so and I've had kids sitting in a classroom with a teacher who I thought was excellent, and they weren't really learning from her because it wasn't a good fit for the way they learned. And so it's teaching is a mixed bag. So if you sent your child to traditional school, that would be a mixed bag too. They most likely wouldn't do any better than you're doing. And so that is something, and because it's not individualized, often not as well. And that is really something that we as homeschooling parents need to realize, that the alternative isn't necessarily even as good, but it's certainly not necessarily better. I don't think of us as having a lot of failures, and really, my son really made me, I never, even if I do think I really didn't, even if I do feel like I sort of failed teaching him in an area, I don't ever use that term, because he's correct to say it reflects on, it is actually reflecting on what the work he's doing when I couch things in that way.
No, I totally understand the point you're making. I was referring more to a methodology.
Oh, well, some methodology.
To not be afraid of a methodology not working or not being as effective, that it doesn't necessarily mean learning didn't happen. I feel like I
didn't
express myself clearly.
Because totally right.
That's what I was referring to.
I fell in love with the classical method. I fell in love with the well-trained mind. Sean does not love that approach to learning, and we really had to get away from it and have come back to adding more structure in certain subjects. And as he's gotten older, as I've come to understand that there's a skill set from that method that benefits kids as they head to college, because he really wants to go to a four-year college. And so we go back and forth. It's like I said, it's the Gaia approach. It's this holistic. I look at all the various methodologies and then incorporate the ones that work and as they work. And so I'd be hard pressed to point to any methodology that a friend of ours who is a public school teacher about 4 years ago said to me, well, she actually said, I was really lucky that I could stay home and be and homeschool my son. And then if she could homeschool her kids, she would use the approach we use. And I said, well, what approach is that? Because I had no idea. And she said, well, you use a child-led parent-directed. And I thought that summed it up pretty well for us, but it's without thought. It's really it's with a thought of what works and what Sean needs to learn. For example, you'd probably find it pretty interesting to watch me teaching him chemistry because I want him to learn note-taking. So science is where I lecture from science, and every day that I teach science and he takes notes because it's the easiest way for me to get him to learn how to take notes. He took a couple of college classes in ninth grade, and he would come home with no notes. And I would say, well, aren't some people in the class taking notes? Yeah, but I don't. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you don't know how to take notes. Oh, no. Well, let's learn, because you're going to want to know that skill if you're going to college, you know, so.
I think that actually leads into another area, segues well into something else I wanted to talk with you about, and that is the subject of motivation, motivating our children on their journey. It's not always easy. They're not, at least for in our household, she's not always interested. And I know I get messages at times from homeschoolers asking, how do you keep your children motivated? How do you motivate? How do you get them to be self-motivated? And I still, in all honesty, sometimes struggle with that. I've noticed that as my daughter gets a little older, she is becoming more self-motivated as her goals are starting to become a little more clear for her and what she wants. But as you were just talking about how you loved the classical method, Sean, not so much. What are your feelings on how we motivate our children on this homeschooling journey? And what does that look like to you?
You know, it's interesting because sometimes Sean's really motivated and sometimes he's not. And that's totally normal. Sometimes think of the way you were with academics, and sometimes you were motivated, sometimes you weren't. And sometimes the subject matter, and this is really frustrating in homeschooling, is when the subject matter is super interesting, you can see this being really presented in a fascinating manner, and your child is snoring through it. And that can happen with teens sometimes because they're growing so much. I actually was really glad. I came across a book Sean was still in second grade, what your second grader should know. And the person who wrote the book, I don't have the title exact, but the person who wrote this particular book of, you know, factoids second graders should know, was not a fan of homeschooling. And she said, you know, if you homeschool, the least you can do for your kids is to read a book about brain development so you will understand some of where kids' brains are at. And in this book by Deborah Healy, Your Child's Developing Mind or something like that, her name is Deborah Healy, though. She takes the stand that children want to learn. So if you start from that perspective that kids want to learn, and in particular in a homeschooling family where we really value learning, you should assume that your children want to learn. And some of what you deal with sometimes in the homeschooling situation is parent-child things. And so I've learned it's become easier over the years for me to say to Sean, this is my teacher hat. Quit treating me like your parent.
I don't know if others will agree with me, but for me, that is a profound piece of advice, because homeschooling is, in a way, I think of as like extreme parenting, in the sense that you are with your child, you know, 24/7, so to speak, and responsible for every facet of your child's development, including their education. And so it can be difficult, I think, or maybe not even given a thought to differentiating between I'm speaking to you as your mother or your parent, and I'm speaking to you as your teacher. And you're right, they aren't always motivated in life. I'm not always motivated in life. I just have developed that ability to do what I have to do, whether I want to do it or not, but I have to do it. So for me personally, you answered the question beautifully. I mean, actually very helpful advice to me. And I know a few friends who would agree that that's...
Well, it helps a lot that I have had three adult kids go through school. Because when they weren't motivated, I didn't care. Now, because I'm teaching my one child, it really matters really a lot, you know, or this baby of the bunch. And so I'm not fair to him. Just remember,
right.
I mean, to me, at the end of the day, you just, if you're homeschooling your child, you're responsible for them learning certain core concepts that they're going to want, depending on where they want to go and where they're going to go or need.
Exactly.
And whether they want to learn that stuff or not.
Exactly. Well, I think that we've covered a fairly wide range of micro topics inside the eclectic academic umbrella, and I want to thank you for your time and sharing your wisdom with me and all of our listening audience. So I never cease to be amazed that you always have a nugget that when we have a conversation, I always get a little something. No matter how many times I've conversed with you, listened to you, read what you've written, there's always a little something there for me, and I certainly hope that there was something there for our listeners. It was great.
Well, thank you very much. I have something that I like to close with, and it is that the benefits from an academically rich, innovative, eclectic journey through learning will really result in an individual who loves learning, even on the days they're not motivated. It's about the journey. It's not about the one stop. The kids who go through this, they will have a relationship with learning and what in education is called an ownership over their academics. And ownership means they feel that they own the knowledge that they have because of the way that they learned it in homeschooling. And that ownership over their academics, it is hard to achieve in any other academic setting. You remember the ephemeral it's and those tickets that we were talking about a bit later. When a person has this type of journey through learning, the tickets fall into their lap. And it's not the reason for doing it, but they just happen. Because if you, again, document, everybody, but if you do something unique, not everybody is going to look at that and think that you got it just right, and you don't care because that's not why you're doing it anyway. But the facts that I now can see from having this 17-year-old, the number of individuals who will walk up to that person or talk to that person or say to you, wow, you are lucky that you had this particular journey. And I'm sure that your daughter hears that as well. It's something like my son sometimes when we, and I will close on this, sometimes my son and I, he'll complain and I will look at him and I will say, you know, if I wasn't sure that when you're 30, you're going to think I got this one right, I would behave a lot differently. I would take what you're saying now more seriously. It's not that I don't listen to him, but I recognize as an adult that some of the profound journeys, and again, you might feel like the journey's not profound, but when somebody understands how they learn and
and feels ownership over their knowledge, it is actually a big deal.
I completely agree. And I also agree that there are things that we understand will be important to them or they'll be thankful for years from now that they may not understand or be thankful for today. Not everything, but some things, for sure. And that, I call that playing my mama card. You know, I'll say to Anna, okay, I'm going to play the mama card here. You may not agree with me now. You may not see it now, but in a year or 10, you're going to get it. And thankfully, there's been enough times where she's, even now at this age, grown up to say, wow, you were right. I'm glad this, or I understand that now, that it motivates her when I play that card. She knows that I'm speaking a truth to her. And so I completely understand and agree with what you're saying. Well, that concludes today's session on secular eclectic academic homeschooling with our guest, Blair Lee. Thank you so much, Blair. I enjoyed the conversation with you, as I always do. And I'd like to make sure to let our listeners know that Blair will be at the C Homeschoolers Conference in June 1st through the 4th, West Virginia at Shepherd University. She has 3 talks that she's going to be giving, and I look forward to hearing those. And I, Mary Buckroth, am going to be there as well, speaking on secular homeschooling. And we certainly hope that with the vendors and other speakers that we have that will be attending the conference, you will hop on to www.chomeschoolers.com and get your tickets today. It's going to be an amazing, amazing experience, and I look forward to being there for that. Soon, C Homeschoolers will be launching a podcast show called Seaside Chat with Blair and myself, where we chat about all things homeschooling, academic, secular, eclectic, and then some. So we hope that you will look for that to come March 1st, and you can follow the C Homeschoolers Facebook page. Pretty soon Seaside Chat will have its own Facebook page that you can follow and get more information at C Homeschoolers website. Lots of exciting things are happening in the world of homeschooling, in the secular homeschooling world, and we hope that you will join us on that journey. Have a wonderful day, everyone, and thanks for listening.